Well, welcome everyone. This is a public input session. This is from the North Dakota Public Service Commission. It's 5:30, July 29th, 2024. This is an NSP natural gas rate increase case. Our case number is PU-23-367. And we hold these public input sessions in advance of our more formal hearings that will be held on this. In the hearings, I'm speaking to the public now, we will dig much more deeply into this. Our staff of experts are working on the case already. We will have consultants working on it. The hearing, people from the company, as well as our consultants, will be under oath. It will probably last several days. This is a much more general session for the public. It's important that we hear from the public and stay in tune. I think all three of us pride ourselves as commissioners on doing that. And so we have these public input sessions in advance. We held one this noon, now another one in the evening for those who are unable to participate at noon. And we'll have the company go through and kind of explain just the generals of the case and then open it up to the public. Commissioner Haugenhoffert, did you have any other opening comments before we start up?
No, I do not.
Okay, then Commissioner Fedorchak, this is your portfolio, so I'll turn it over to you for opening comments and then just however you want to proceed with the company.
Thank you, Chair Christman. Do we have anybody online, Clayton? Just curious. Okay. Well, I won't go through all the background then, since it's pretty much just us in the room, right? And you guys heard my pitch, and you knew it before I said it. So I will just turn it over to you, Alex, to the company, to walk through it in case somebody logs in while we're talking.
Perfect. Thank you, Commissioner.
Although, yep. Just we've heard from the company. They've explained it to us. If nobody's online listening,
we have
no one on the
phone.
Oh. Okay.
Oh. Okay.
So that's the reason.
So we do have three viewers. Okay. Okay. Well, I'll give my spiel then.
Then let's have them go through what you
need. Yeah. Okay. Perfect. So the public input for those who are listening and might want to give some public input, the public input helps us know what folks who are paying the bills that they're and paying the rates that are being proposed and are already in effect in terms of interim, how they feel about it, what their issues are, what concerns they might have. And this is an opportunity for also the public to understand what's driving the case. What are the things that the company is doing that cause them to come here and ask for higher rates? So that's the whole point of this. They really are helpful for us. They're helpful for our advisory staff who's looking at the case and digging into it and asking a lot of questions. And so we always offer these public input sessions to get that kind of insight from the ratepayers. So with that, we'll start with the company. Alex Nisbet from Xcel Energy is with us today, and he has a number of experts online that he'll introduce, and he's going to walk through some of the drivers of this case and other background, and then we'll get to the public input. So I would love to hear from you all if you have anything to share with us. Alex, go for it.
Thank you very much, and thank you to the entire commission and staff and whoever it is that is viewing online. Thank you very much for joining us this evening to discuss our 2023 natural gas notice of change in rates for North Dakota. This is PU-23-367. As discussed, we had a noon session today. This is our 5:30 session, and we also do have a public hearing on September 3rd, 2024, where we'll be going into these matters with more detail. My title, I'm a regulatory policy specialist out of our Fargo, North Dakota office. With me, I've got four other individuals from the company. I have Lisa Peterson, who's the Director of Regulatory Pricing and Analysis. I have Mary Pope, who's a Principal Rate Analyst, Ian Dobson, who's a Lead Assistant General Counsel, as well as Amber Headland, who's a Regulatory Manager with Xcel Energy. Turn to the second slide of today's presentation. This is a map of our North Dakota service territory. Obviously, we have the Red River going essentially down the middle of it. We'll be talking about everything on the western side of the Red River. We have 63,000 customers in North Dakota, approximately 1,150 miles of distribution mains. And here's a listing of our communities in our service area, the largest ones being Fargo, Grand Forks, West Fargo, and Horace. As I mentioned earlier today, we've seen growth over the last 5 years, about 11% overall increase in our natural gas customers. On average, each year we're seeing about a 2% growth, and that trend is expected to continue in the future. On slide number three, we will get into the overall drivers of this case and why we're here today to discuss this matter. The main reason are for reliability and safety of our infrastructure and our overall system in North Dakota. The investments in the gas distribution system in North Dakota include first being our replacement of meter modules. We currently have our AMR meters that are set to be replaced by the end of 2025. We're currently on pace for that. The next set of improvements are safety improvements, such as the replacement of outdated pipe, being LDLA and vintage steel. Each year, we replace about 10 miles of pipe, about 50-50, about 5-ish miles for each set of pipe. It will take a couple more decades to replace it in its entirety, but we are targeting the most high-risk areas on an immediate basis. So, like I said, anywhere about 5 or 6 miles per year for each one of those. Yep.
Just curious, do you know approximate cost?
Sorry about that. Do you know the approximate cost per mile on that replacement?
I think we have the overall spend number, I think for 24 and 23. If somebody on the line, maybe Mary, if you're able to rattle off that number quickly. I don't have the full filing in front of me, but either if you don't have it now, I could come back to it in a couple minutes too. Okay.
I don't have that number, Alex, but I'm sorry, I was unable to hear the question. Could I please hear the question again?
Hi, Mary. This is Commissioner Haugen Huffert. I just asked about with the replacement 5 to 6 miles per year, what is the cost per mile?
Okay, I'll find that out.
The third bullet point being relocation projects, including moving infrastructure impacted by the FM flood diversion. A question had been asked about this during the noon session today. We're still looking into that question. The fourth bullet point being new pipeline and infrastructure, such as high-pressure gas distribution projects in Grand Forks and West Fargo. Overall, these projects are done to increase capacity, and sometimes they can be a little lumpy, but overall they provide benefits to the entire system to be able to serve on our overall peak days. So those would be those four bullet points. Below that, we make note of our investment in natural gas peaking plants. We have three peaker plants. They're in Minnesota. One is natural gas. The other two are propane. The significant investments that we've been making in those over the last couple of years are to deal with safety, fire detection, and suppression. We're doing this out of a requirement to meet the necessary regulatory requirements and also just from a safety standpoint to make sure that we're up to code and also able to use these facilities as necessary, because they are a capacity measure that prevents us from going and needing to make additional investments. I think in the 22 rate case, we spoke about how if we weren't able to update these and keep these peaker plants online, we'd potentially have to go and beef up capacity on, I think it was Northern Natural Gas Line, and I think it was to the tune of maybe $60 to $70 million per year. So these are investments, and I think we're making them and with the understanding that it should be, these peaker plants should be ready as necessary for at least the next couple of decades to come with these necessary safety fire suppression investments that we're making. The last bullet point just being investments in information technology, fleet modernization, improvements to facilities. So those ones are relatively straightforward. The next slide is going through our rate request as filed. We filed this at the end of last year. We filed it on December 29th, 2023. Within it, we used a 2024 test year. As stated in our application, we had a $98,000,000, $453,000 revenue requirement, which leads to a deficiency of about $8.5 million over what was approved in our last rate case, which we filed in 2021, and it was a 2022 test year. As stated here, we have an interim rate increase of $7.9 million, and these interim rates were effective March 1 of 2024. Our customers have been seeing those on their bills since then, and those are subject to refund once final rates have been put into effect. As stated here, final rates are likely to be effective in the fourth quarter of 2024. We have our hearing upcoming in September, and so customers should be expecting an interim rate refund more likely than not in the fourth quarter of 2024. On the right-hand side of this slide, you see a quick breakdown of four different classes, residential being the top one. On the next slide, we'll go into the residential class a little bit more in detail. As stated here and on the next page, an average residential monthly bill for a customer that's using 65 therms, they're expecting to see about a $6.75 per month increase in their bill. And then other increases are listed there for firm and industrial customers. On this slide, we'll be breaking down into a little bit more detail the proposed revisions to a residential customer's bill. Historically, in North Dakota, for our natural gas customers, they would see two main charges on their bill. They would see a fixed delivery services charge. That charge right now is $22.25. And that's what our customers pay so that we can bring natural gas to them. It's those costs of $22.25. Those include bringing gas via our local distribution system, pipes, meters, trucks, billing, gas procurement, engineering, construction, ops, everything like that is included in our fixed delivery services charge. The other bigger part of the pie that you see up here is our cost of gas charge, which is the actual purchasing of the gas itself, which is the commodity that we flow through our pipes. As you'll also notice here, as I indicated, historically it had been two pieces of this pie. We are now seeing three. What we're proposing in this natural gas rate increase is a new volumetric distribution charge of 6.155 cents per therm. And that's an average increase of about $4 per month for a residential average monthly bill if you're using 65 therms. So that's where we get the $6.75 increase per month. What we'd be doing is, what we've proposed is to increase from $22.25 to $25 and then pick up that remaining $4 through that volumetric distribution charge. And on the final slide, we will be showing the average gas bills during a winter heating season for a residential customer. This is going back to the 2012-2013 heating season. You will see the delivery services charge. Those had remained at about $18.48 for about a 15-year span. And then there was the rate increase, rate application and rate increase in the 21-22, 22-23. And then, as discussed a couple prior slides, due to the capital investments, things of that nature that we've been making over the last couple of years, that's why we're here once again, to make sure that we're setting our rates properly so that we can capture the revenue requirements for the necessary reliability and safety precautions that we're implementing on our system. And as you can also see, the larger piece that's on the top side, that's once again the wholesale natural gas costs that can vary widely on a monthly basis due to price fluctuations and also customer gas usage. If it's a cold month, cold winter, you're going to see higher gas costs, gas usage. Overall, you can also see that our costs have remained below the consumer price index if you're starting over on the far left-hand side and following that graph across. With that, I will turn it back over to the commission for any questions or anybody online.
No one's on. Is there still people listening? Okay, so good. That's excellent. People are listening.
More than doubled our numbers.
Absolutely. Hopefully they found it to be worthwhile. I think, as in this afternoon, I'll ask you to go into a little bit more detail on the drivers of the rate case, some of the investments that the company's making that are kind of driving your request for higher rates.
Yeah, absolutely. So this rate case is largely driven by capital investments in our system. As I alluded to at the beginning, the system continues to grow. And with that, at times, we'll need to make capacity investments. We'll need to make pipes longer so that we can continue to serve all of our customers on an average load day, peak load day. Sometimes those can get a little bumpy, but throughout the entire system, the benefits will be borne out, plus also with additional customers, new customers, those revenue increases should be offsetting some of those additional charges. So there's that side of things was one of the bullet points. A lot of safety driven improvements, such as the LDIL-A and vintage steel pipe, dug into that a little bit more since our call today. Those ones, I think for our steel pipes, I think it was 145 miles of that are currently on our system. I think it's 5 to 6. I think we did 6 miles last year, averaging 5 to 6 miles per year. And as I also alluded to, we're targeting the most high-risk areas, going through monitoring, checking that to make sure that those, as necessary, are replaced on the most expedited basis. And the concerns with LDIL-A is that they're just brittle pipes. They could potentially break as time goes on. And then with the vintage steel pipes, the concern with those is corrosion. So the vintage steel, I think, those were the 145, and that's 5 to 6. LDIL-A, I think it was about 98 miles, maybe 100 miles, somewhere in that number. And that's also seeing that 5 to 6 miles per year that's being replaced. And then the other things, it's a couple of big high-pressure distribution projects. Grand Forks, there was one for, it was about $3.7 million for a large customer to become firm. We added them onto the system, and through that, it's helping our overall system. There's great benefits through the entirety of the system to add that customer there. And then a big one is also, there were more questions, to have those natural gas peaking plants on the system. I think in the filings we'll make reference to it, and also there weren't any costs associated with this rate case to my knowledge, but we have different measures such as storage facilities, peaker plants, things of that nature, to try to plan for those high peak, high demand days, coldest days in January and February, to make sure that we're able to smooth some of those costs, some of those commodity costs, where those we're obviously always watching the spot market. We are trying to hedge our bets accordingly with storage, and to be able to continue to invest in those LNG and propane peaker plants is very important, to try to cushion some of the blow of those highest costs on those peak demand days in the wintertime. So that's just sort of another main point. And then it's just overall replacement, updating the system, making sure that we're continuing to update modules, do annual safety recalls, just checking things constantly, updating that. So that is the main points. And if there are any other additional drivers, we have the testimony that's filed. And I think the hearing days, we can dig into it more. But that's everything that I've seen and read, and it's been explained to me by our expert witnesses that this is some things that can be a little bit lumpy at time. And I think, as we discussed earlier, we had gone along for 15 years without a natural gas rate case. We're currently seeing once-in-a-lifetime, once-in-a-generation inflationary pressures, and we're seeing just costs increasing across the board. And it's too bad our customers, our ratepayers, the consumers of North Dakota are seeing increases in everything. But it also means that the infrastructure, the pipes, the labor, everything that we're doing, everything that we're procuring, those are also seeing those same increases as well. So it's tough for everybody to see it at the same time, but that's just sort of currently what's happening. I wish that I had a crystal ball, being able to see where we're at 2, 3, 4 years ago. There is the fact that, yeah, we were just in a rate case 2 years ago. We're able to hone in on some of these issues, and it is also great that the commission can provide us with signals as far as investments or rate structure or things of that nature, and also venues like this public input session when we get comments from the public. So all that is very important to be able to make sure that we're making proper investments, having other people check it, think through it, things of that nature.
Thank you, Alex. Two follow-up questions to that. Can you speak a little bit more about what a peaker plant is, what it does, what function it serves?
Yep. Yeah, so it would be the overall function of it is, and we have three of these plants. They're all in Minnesota. They have large storage tanks on hand, and we have liquefied natural gas, and we have liquefied propane. And on the highest peak days, we can vaporize the liquefied natural gas or the propane to create additional gas for use on those days, and then put it into our system, and then essentially use it as a hedge to try to prevent the highest fluctuations of natural gas prices on those days. Because we're always, I think we have some long-term natural gas prices locked in, and then we also have some spot market purchases that we're making as well. So obviously when you're in the coldest days, when everybody wants natural gas, it's just a supply and demand thing, and the demand is through the roof and the supply is about the same, and that's where you're just seeing increase in costs. As far as the technical, I don't quite know much more than, in my mind, I'm just envisioning a big tank that we're able to liquefy and throw it onto the system. As far as the actual decatherms, the CFM, the things like that, to be able to quantify it, I'm not 100% sure on that. And the same thing with the storage facilities. I think they're a little bit further south, maybe in Kansas, other areas like that. They're largely set up to try to buffer those most expensive peak days to try to help those commodity prices for our customers. But as always, you have to weigh the pros and cons. It's an offset. There's benefits to it, but you also don't want to overbuild the peaker system as well and put too many on there so that you aren't using those efficiently. So that's something to be mindful of as well.
All right. Thank you for that. And then one other follow-up. With at the pace of 5 to 6 miles of replacement of both the LDLA and the vintage steel, so that's 10 to 12 a year, if we, you know, are adjusting the rates to allow for that in this rate case, then that should be something that you can use annually moving forward, right? Like not having to, because if you're constantly doing that and we add that to the kind of the rates, it shouldn't be. I mean, because if I'm a customer, I'm listening thinking, geez, there's never ending, almost 4 to 5 to 6 miles a year, and with 105 miles, that's you know, 10 years longer, 20 years. That's a long time in the life of a customer, and just want to get your thoughts on that sort of frame of mind, that if we are increasing the rates for it now, that's not something you should have to come back for every 2 years.
I'm assuming, yeah, that increased costs allocated to that activity, I'm assuming that it would not need to increase in the future. Somebody on the line could correct me if that's wrong, but that would be my understanding.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Commissioner Fedorchuk. Let me jump in. It's Ian Dobson in Minnesota. I think to put a little more flesh on that, I think that's right. Look, what you're saying is that once we have built that in, that sort of newer pipe is reflected in rates. The only, you know, small caveat I would make to it, and I don't know exactly how it will play out as we go forward, but if we are upgrading or updating our pipe such that across the system, the entire the sort of average age of the pipe is getting newer, theoretically that would sort of increase our overall costs a little bit over time. I say that hesitating a bit because, you know, I think your point is right that by updating this now, that is certainly, you know, pushing those costs up, and those are sort of baked in for customers. And obviously in terms of any future rate increase requests that we would potentially have, I don't know, but there's a lot of other factors that would play into whether we would need increased rates down the road.
Right. Right. But for that helpful driver. I see Victor. Yep. Victor shook on staff with a microphone near his mouth, so that must mean he has something to add.
Yeah. So the revenue requirement that's being asked for by the company would cover the depreciation and return on the rate base that's being added because of the pipe replacement. It would only cover the pipe that's been replaced already. Future replacements would not be included in what they're requesting at this time. Mm. And since replacements of aging pipe such as this don't generate new customers, I would expect a continuation of this to lead to increases in the future. Maybe not every 2 years or 3 years, but depending on the pace that they're going, it would lead to additional increased requests, in my opinion. Mm. So I like the
company's answer better.
Well, Commissioner Fedorchuk, let me just add, I agree with that. I think what I'm trying to balance against is that the pipe that we have added in, for example, 2024, in 2026 will have depreciated. And so I think Mr. Shook's right, and I think all I'm trying to say is that you're ending up looking at the overall vintage of your pipe across the system. But he's correct. If you're taking your oldest pipe and replacing it with newer pipe, that single transaction is moving it up. But all of the other pipes in your system are also depreciating. And so it's where that balance hits,
right,
in line with all the other factors.
Okay. Then if you could talk a little bit about how new customer growth is helping to offset some of these. And, you know, when you talk about extensions, I commonly hear from customers, existing customers, who get frustrated with any of the utilities. Like, why are we paying for these new customers? Why aren't they paying for themselves?
Yeah, and I can provide just sort of a general quick response. And I think it's always our hope and intention and thought that new customers aren't necessitating the existing customers to subsidize them, pay for them, pay for the extensions, things of that nature. The hope is that as our customer base grows, as our revenue base grows, then they're obviously offsetting that. Sometimes it can get a little bit lumpy, but overall, those additional customers, they're paying their way. Obviously, if it's a customer that's further out in one of our jurisdictions, in one of our service areas, I think we have tariffs, we have different rates, we have different cost recovery mechanisms where we'd specifically be going to that customer to make sure that the infrastructure that's required to service them is not being spread out over the entire rate base. But I know just looking at the waterfall chart in this, I think there was $2.1 million something. There's some dollar amount associated with new customer revenues that's helping to offset some of these capital expenditures. So that would be my answer. But then, yeah, the other big thing, any of the major expenditures, then, yeah, we have other methodologies, other means, other tariffs to pick those up. Ian, if you wanted to add in any more on that too.
This is Lisa Peterson, I could jump in here. Yeah, I just wanted to add a little bit to what Alex has said here. We have extension rules and tariff in our tariff book that speak to extensions. So if we're extending into a new territory, it has to justify, the revenue has to justify the costs. We have a formula in tariff that we run the analysis on, and if the revenues over the time frame that's in tariff don't justify the costs that we're projecting, the customer is allowed to pay for that the difference outright or through a special facilities charge of some sort through a period of time. So it's also our intention that new customers coming online are not.
All right, very good. Oh, you broke up, Elisa, a little bit.
I broke up?
Yeah, just at the end there.
Okay. So I'm not sure how far back I broke up. I just wanted to note that because of what the policy is in our tariff book on extensions, that is there for the purpose of new customers not being subsidized by current customers. They have to pay their fair share to get on the system and be served by us. So if they don't justify outright with the revenues that we bring on the system, they can pay the difference in order to still be have gas service extended to them and not harm existing customers.
Okay, great, thank you, mm-hmm. Randy, Sherry, do we have any questions online? Nope. How many viewers? Five. Lost some. Randy, Sherry?
I do not have any questions at this time.
Nor do I. Well, I thought Sherry would ask a little bit about the I didn't want to steal the question, but I think talking a little bit about the fixed basic service charge, and then the adding of the distribution charge in this proposed request, some discussion about that might be warranted for the folks that are listening as well.
Yeah, thank you. And I'll just start it off by saying this was something that was a concern that was raised during the last natural gas rate case. I wasn't here for it at that point in time. I've obviously read the order and the dissent that's associated with it. And it's something that we wanted to propose in this application to see what the commission thought, and also have it be reviewed by commission staff and their consultants. It raises just some overall philosophical discussions and debates as far as signals provided to customers, as far as providing additional costs associated with the volumetric portions of their rates. Once again, I'll probably move it over to Lisa if you wanted to add anything additional as far as just the overall genesis of this and sort of the purpose and the thoughts around this additional potential charge.
Sure. Thanks, Alex. Yeah, so as Alex mentioned, the part of the genesis of the distribution charge that we proposed in this case was due to the discussion that was held throughout the last gas case, where there was some hope that there would be a distribution charge coming out of that case. The other thing that we looked at was for the new members of the audience here, we run a class cost of service study analysis in each rate case, which tells us for our overall costs, you know, we get down to kind of the nitty gritty of cost elements. For each class, it tells us how much costs that class is causing on our system. That's the purpose of the study. And so for the residential class, we noted that with our request this time, the residential class is not paying their fair share, their full share to for what costs they're causing to come onto the system or to be on the system. And so the cost of service study had indicated that in order to get the residential class to pay their full share of cost, they would have to have an increase of 24.5% based on our request that we filed late in December. We're not going to increase everybody's rates 24.5%, but that indicated to us that it was an above average increase was recommended or was shown through the class cost of service study the class cost of service study showed that it was reasonable to provide the residential class with an above average increase in order to try to make up some of the ground towards their full cost causation. We sort of settled on the 12.5% increase. I think the overall average increase was 9.4%. So it's a little bit above that 9.4%. And then when we looked further at the class cost of service study, it provides some details around what the average residential customer cost for what we call customer related costs are. That's things like things that where costs are born because a customer comes onto our system. So you need a meter, you need some work done in billing, you need things of that nature the costs are there because the customer comes onto our system. That portion of our cost of service study indicated that a residential customer should be paying a fixed monthly charge of about $25.40 or 50 cents. And so that's where we proposed the $25 fixed charge for our customers, the basic delivery charge for our customers. And then to get to the full 12.5% increase that we recommended or proposed. We put the rest of the increase in a volumetric, the distribution charge, which is a volumetric charge. If you'd like, I can walk through a little bit how that looks on a customer bill from a bill perspective.
That'd be helpful.
Sure. So as a customer, when you get your bill today, you have a delivery services charge of $22.25, and that's the same every month. It does not vary with how much gas you use. It doesn't vary because winter usage, if you're heating your home with gas, you have a high level of usage, and then the summer you have a much lower level of usage. It is always $22.25. Your distribution charge would be charged, it's a dollars per therm charge, so it is a volumetric charge. As you use more gas in the winter time, your total, the rate would stay the same all year round, but the fact that you're using more means that the total bill that you would be charged based on your distribution charge would vary from winter to summer, for example. In the summer, I would expect it to be very low, and in the winter, I would expect it to be higher because of the usage pattern that most of our residential customers have. It acts a lot more like your fuel charge on your bill than your flat fee charge, your delivery services charge.
Thank you, Lisa. That was helpful. Mm-hmm. All right. Anything?
So on that volumetric charge, that can be controlled by the consumer, correct?
Yes. So as you use more or less, if you decide you want to conserve gas, your distribution charge would reflect that as well, similar to your fuel charge. As you use less gas in the summertime, your fuel charge is also less. It would react in that same manner, where as you control your usage, you would also control that the billed amount that's based on the distribution charge.
So hopefully there's some education, if something like this is approved, that the company goes through as far as helping consumers understand some of the controls that they can do as a ratepayer. Boy, I had another question, and there it went. But go ahead, Chris. I'll think about it.
This is Chris Hansen with staff. If you could address your other gas jurisdictions, and, so up to now, we've only ever had a base charge and no volumetric charge. Can you speak to your other gas jurisdictions and how prevalent that is to have only base charges, and kind of what the mix of volumetric and base charges are in some of your other jurisdictions as compared to North Dakota?
Sure. In Minnesota, which is the other gas jurisdiction that I'm most familiar with, we have similar to the delivery services charge, we have a fixed charge of $9. And we then, of course, have a increased volumetric charge to sort of make up that difference, if you will, for every sort of dollar that's not in that delivery services charge. You would obviously increase the volumetric charge to, for example, get to the 12.5% overall increase. So we do have a little different structure. We've always in Minnesota had the delivery services charge and the distribution charge and the fuel charge, like we're proposing here. I would say that I think there's some benefits to having a higher delivery services charge, a higher fixed charge for customers. I think that there's probably arguments in both directions for that. I think that as you consider, customers that have higher usage, let me back up a little bit. Most of our costs are fixed costs. You know, once you put that pipe in the ground, it's a fixed cost. It's there. We've spent the money. Apart from fuel, I would say, and there's some smaller amounts of our costs that are volumetric or variable in that regard. Most of our costs are fixed costs. And so as you think about particularly our residential class, that is much more similar to each other, I would say, than our commercial classes, our industrial classes that vary more widely in how they use their gas. It costs us roughly the same amount of fixed costs per each residential customer to have them on the system. And if they're paying for fixed costs with a fixed charge, that is, at least in my opinion, a little bit more fair than having someone that maybe has an older, perhaps more not as well insulated home that's a little bit bigger. They might be using more gas, but the fixed cost that we incurred to bring them gas isn't any different than somebody who's using a lot less than average. And so right now, or like in Minnesota, for example, our setup is such that those customers that are that use more than average are in some ways subsidizing those customers that are using less than average on the whole.
What did you say the fixed charge was in Minnesota?
Right now, it's $9.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any questions online? Nope. We must be covering everything that people are interested in.
Hi, this is Mary Pope from Excel, and I wanted to hop in if this is a good time with the cost per mile for installing the new pipe.
So, very good.
That was a question raised earlier. Based on 2023 actual data, pipe replacement averaged approximately $290,000 per mile.
All right. Thank you, Mary.
Sure.
All right. Anybody have any more questions? I don't, but it doesn't look like Sherry does. Randy?
Well, so if there may be viewers that have questions but are just waiting, so why don't we make it clear if they have a question, they should call in the next
couple minutes. Minute.
3-4 minutes or yeah. Something. And
call in now on that if phone you have bridge. A question.
Okay.
Excellent, because we, once we kind of exhaust our questions and have been on for a good 45, almost 50 minutes, we'll probably wind it down if there aren't any public questions.
Yeah. And for those who are monitoring it, even though I think it was noticed to run till like 7, but if nobody has any public comments, just waiting that long just costs the companies more time for their people. It costs us more time for our people, and the rate players and taxpayers end up paying that. So we'll be as efficient as possible. While we wait, I'll just ask you, Peyton, did you have any questions since
noon? No, I'm just
noon?
Like sitting here to write it at this point.
Okay.
Just loitering in case someone does holler something over the line.
I think we're good, Randy.
Okay. You good, Sherry? Chris, Victor. Alex, anything else you wanted to add? Okay, if not, this public input session is concluded. Thank you, everyone, for watching and listening. And I'll see some of you tomorrow morning. Thank you, everyone.
Excellent. Bye. Thanks, y'all.